Spaniak, Editorial Director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. Today, I have the honor and the privilege of being with Beau Bishop, who is Executive Director of Creative Strategy, and Elliot Chaffer, Executive Creative Director at New York City-based Trollback & Company. And we are talking about Trollback's work with ABC to refresh their brand that first went live back in August, I believe. Hello, gentlemen. Thank you so much for being with me.
Hello. Thank you, Paige.
Hi there.
Hello, and it's my pleasure. So before we start, this is a real question. Can you explain to me, I was just looking at both your titles and I was like, okay, these are pretty similar. So just explain to me the difference between Executive Creative Director and Executive Director Creative Strategy. I will start with Elliot.
Thank you. Hi, my side of things, I work very closely with Beau and the strategy team, but I'm not a words man. I'm more images and, you know, design systems. So if that's the simple answer, that's mine. I think Beau might have a better way of saying it.
No, thanks, Elliot. Yeah, so the simple answer is that I lead our strategy and writing practice at Trollback, and Elliot leads the creative practice in terms of design. So often those things interlap and intersect with each other, overlap and intersect with each other, obviously. So we work very closely hand in hand just to make sure that the thinking, the making, and the creating are all coming from the same place.
Okay, thank you. How did this whole project with ABC get its start? Start with Beau, just to switch it around.
Yeah, this was a project that came out of several other projects that we had worked with. We've had the pleasure of working with ABC and clients across the Walt Disney Company for a number of years. So actually several of our clients from a Fox Entertainment rebrand that we did in 2019 were at ABC at this point in 2020 and brought us in to help them work on the brand at that level as well.
Anything to add, Elliot?
Yeah, I think one really exciting part for us was that it was a direct award based on the Fox work.
So that means you didn't have to pitch.
Right. And we love that kind of process. I mean, we love pitching too, but there's something really nice when you have a direct award. You know, you can just get the sleeves up a lot earlier and get in there and sort of, you know, really sort of shape the thing together rather than some of the other processes that take a little longer and resources get diluted across other companies, basically.
So when you said this, you got this in 2020. So what was the brief? What did the brief look like and how long did you have to work on it?
We started in earnest in January of 2020. The brief
was a good time for everybody.
I know, exactly. the perfect time to start this. Honestly, it was a really exciting beginning to this process. We, Elliot and I and Betsy, our intrepid producer, got to give her a shout out, by the way, spent a week or so in the offices in LA, just doing a lot of really deep dive intake with people, talking to stakeholders, talking to people about the brand. And one thing that really came out of that was there are a few things at work. They needed an identity, a design, a brand that really functions beautifully and seamlessly across platforms and, you know, including digital and social and all of those wonderful touch points that we have at our fingertips now. The brand that they were working with at the time, you know, I think as we all know, as entertainment fans listening to this podcast, or we know that ABC is an iconic brand that's gone through many different iterations over the years. So some of the more 3D iterations that they've had of the brand don't necessarily scale or weren't necessarily designed to scale for the digital and social platforms that we have now. So that's one thing that we learned early on, just a practical need to update the identity for you know, modern touch points, but also the desire to, the quote at the time was to bring the swagger back to the brand and in some ways broadcast in general and to really embrace the medium and really give ABC really permission to take a bold step forward. That was the mandate. That was the desire internally that we found, you know, working with the stakeholders. And so I think those two things, the desire to modernize the brand, to bring the swagger back a bit to the brand, and then to really establish the ABC brand as its own entity within the larger Disney ecosystem.
So two questions about that. One is, Why doesn't, this is like a 101, I'm not a designer question.
Yes.
Why doesn't a 3D logo or look translate across platforms? And then the bigger question is, when you're considering not so much the tactical look and feel of what you do, but the strategic part, what kinds of things did you discuss in terms of what was needed to quote unquote bring the swagger back?
On the second point, it was interesting because I think one thing that was crucial as well, beyond just the tactical issue of 3D scaling, was they wanted to really, you know, hard target a female audience as well. And actually, you know, obviously be inclusive of men, but still, you know, lean it more in that direction. And so, yeah, on that note of the swagger, I mean, one of the fun comments that came up in one of our interviews was, you know, we make cool shit for baller women. And that was kind of an exciting sort of.
Can't really use that as your tagline, though.
Right.
Yeah, but we, you know, we love the sentiment of it, right?
And yeah.
And so that kind of related later on to sort of how we even took the flat stuff into a little bit more of a glossy, sheeny look. And then I've definitely forgotten the first question you just asked.
It was, why does 3D not scale across digital platforms?
Right. I mean, generally, 3D is not meant designed to scale, right? So when, I guess, when former companies had done that iteration, you know, it was obviously more for sort of big expressive IDs and things like that, right? So obviously, you can make 3D scale, but I think it's beyond just a 3D question. I think there's practical implications mm-hmm. with all the affiliates that, you know, there's like hundreds of other logos that this logo has to lock up with. Quite frankly, there's a lot of different shapes and sizes and colors and designs that these literally have to sit with. So it was also a strategic idea to simplify and make the ABC mark not compete with all of those affiliates and be a simpler offering in general and more iconic in a way.
I think an important point here too is that typically a lot of the assets that you see in terms of an identity for specifically a TV network, you know, quote unquote, tend to work really beautifully and have been designed for a screen experience on a TV. What we found over the years at Trollback and Elliot and I in our practice together, we really try to approach every brand as we would a Nike or an Apple or a brand that is a consumer brand that has to work across any sort of space or surface or screen. So the 3D question is less about how to, like, 3D itself could scale to different surfaces and touch points, but the reality is that a lot of television brands have been specifically designed for television. Mm-hmm. And what we found is, like, our work with Vox or with CBS or ABC or any number of FX, any number of these brands, is that if you philosophically shift and think about them as entertainment brands that have to come to life everywhere rather than broadcast brands that have to come to life on television, and you start to design and think about the brands outside of the linear television space, it opens up a lot of really interesting opportunities and creates a way more flexible brand.
Do you find that probably more of an Elliot question. Do you find that more limiting or expansive as a designer?
No, it's part of our philosophy as well. I mean, just to sort of give a little Trollback plug here, Jacob, our founder, you know, he has this philosophy that we, you know, we use as much as possible, which is discard everything that means nothing. And so to us, if something is meaningless and then just adds more confusion, why do it? So what we also do as well from the strategic side, which Bo will talk more about, is modern brands have fundamental elements and then they flex them. But it doesn't mean that you need to flex them all the time. You just flex them when, as and where is needed. So for us, it was more of that, like, bring it back down to a new level. Very soon after the brand launched, they were already doing 3D extrusions of it in a sort of studio environment. But it wasn't an on-screen element. It was actually in the set, you know, as a physical kind of light box. You know, I think it's that sort of that idea of do it when it's appropriate, but don't try to make something that wasn't meant to be reduced really small as a favicon or whatever.
It's kind of like strip it down to its sort of bare essence, and then they can
scale
it up or down as needed.
Right. Because one thing we encounter a lot, especially with entertainment brands, and I'll say television brands in general, even though I don't really like that term, I think that what you find is often it's very easy to think about the brands in terms of or in context with the content. So with talent or with assets from the shows, the brand can align with those really easily. But the question always for us is, what if we had an empty billboard? We couldn't use any show assets and we only had the brand to tell the story. That's why for us, it becomes really essential to have those foundational elements, like a Nike box. To go back to that example, you've got the swoosh, you've got the Nike word mark, you've got the iconic orange, and all of a sudden you have a brand that can almost live on any surface or space. And then those foundational elements should be flexible enough that you can do a ton of really creative and expressive things with them, but you always have the foundational elements to go back to really ground everything.
It is funny because you mentioned Nike, and honestly, that box popped up right in my head. So you're
exactly
right about that. So, but with a brand like ABC, you know, the term you didn't like was it broadcast brand or television brand? Because I feel like, yeah, like no brand is a television brand anymore. Yeah. But, you know, those brands like CBS, ABC, NBC, do you find them hard to quote unquote brand because they are so broad, or how do you approach that? And let's ask it with regard to ABC, since that's what we're talking about.
I think I'll start with this one. I think it's challenging from a strategic point of view.
Because how do you encompass everything, right? Like they're doing so many different things. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's hard to, sometimes it's difficult or challenging, I'll say, to really differentiate beyond just the content when, you know, it's very easy for something like Comedy Central or Food Network to really own a space because they're owning a very specific genre, a very specific category. Whereas someone like, you know, CBS or ABC or Fox, you know, they're creating and delivering a lot of very diverse content. And it's not even, you know, comedy, drama, unscripted. It's also news, it's sports, it's everything in between. It's daytime, it's affiliate content. So you really need to define a strategy that is flexible enough, I would say elastic enough, to really encompass all of that, but apply to all of it. And so what we did with ABC is really hone in on, I think, what makes the brand special, which is they've always, in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of a lot of stakeholders at the brand, they've always been really emotionally compelling. They very, very much want to connect with people emotionally. And I think that really aligns with the larger you know, Walt Disney Company brand strategy of trying to making people happy as their purpose. We identified early on that emotions are really key to ABC. And I think more than a lot of their direct competitors, they really lean into programming that Paul Lee, their former president, would say is smart with heart, right? It's emotionally compelling, but it's also intelligent. And it pushes culture forward with things like Modern Family or Black-ish, you know, things that really reflect modern culture in a way that's real, but also pushes modern culture forward. So those two things together, this idea of moving people in terms of emotions and in terms of culture, really became the centerpiece of the brand. And that's something that can apply across the board, you know, because we're moved by sports, we're moved by unscripted programming, we're moved by, you know, specials, live events, all of these things. They have an emotional core to them that can be drawn out. And I think ABC does that really well.
Do you want to add anything there, Elliot?
I think, you know, you're talking about other brands like NBC and everything, and ones with such legacy, right? And I think that's obviously a really strong thing with ABC too, right? They, especially like as Bo says, they connect with emotions, but people also have an emotional attachment to the logo. And we did a lot of, obviously, design thinking around, you know, can you even change this logo? And of course, we did a lot of exploration. And of course, we came all the way back to it.
But you didn't change it very much, right?
Right. But the things that we did actually changed a lot of the way it could be used and deployed. And so that's really the underpinning of why we did it.
Can you elaborate on that? So let's talk a little bit about, since we're on a podcast and so no one can see it, but it will be in the post on Brief. You can see what the logos look like. But explain where you started, where you ended up, why, and then how you found that useful in terms of deploying what Bo just talked about.
Yeah, so we started with a lot of exploration, trying out, you know, how far can we push the mark? What do we want it to say? How can it express itself in a different way. And then we obviously came back to the fact that the legacy of Paul Rand, you know, is just so strong. People love it. It's a very iconic mark, but it did need some adjustments for the way we wanted to take it. So what we actually did was we truncated the stem of the B, and we sort of expanded the letter forms a little bit as well, because at one point we were even thinking, could this even sit without the circle around it? Some of the early exploration really tried to push that as well.
You mean the letter forms?
Exactly. So yeah, right. The letter forms, yeah. So, you know, could they sit down the bottom as a bug and still have strength? And with the current logo, it's definitely too thin for that. You know, what we wanted to do is obviously pay homage to Paul Rand. You know, we called it a re-Rand instead of a rebrand. But then the other crucial thing we did was the counters of the letter forms, so like the holes in the middle, we optically centered them and balance them more perfectly to then make the letter forms around. But so that meant that when we have an animation, these three dots would be, you know, the sort of kinetic, you know, sort of catalyst for all the brand exploration in terms of IDs and transitions and bug animation wipes and, you know, everything. So by literally sort of making a much more solid foundational, you know, four circles really pretty much to come together to do a thing, we had something that then had a lot more, you know, you didn't have to recenter the camera as you're zooming in, for example, those kind of like simple design things that are annoying, you know, you just want everything to be like really perfect and straight.
The mandate at the beginning was really interesting from our partners at ABC. They basically said, like, should we keep the same logo? Should we explore something mm-hmm. totally new? Mm-hmm. So we actually, you know, when we started it in January and February 2020, basically anything and everything was on the table. And so we did a pretty extensive exploration into new logos for the brand, much to the chagrin of many of our designers who worship Paul Rand.
Well, I was going to say to the chagrin, because then none of that work was used, but, you know,
yeah, that's your job. But I think very early on in that process, you know, it sounded really exciting to explore that, and it was. But I think we all realized really quickly that, you know, this is, for me, growing up as a kid and watching television and being obsessed with television, it's an iconic brand. And to me, it's on the same level as a Levi's or a Coca-Cola or Ford, you know, in terms of iconic American brands. So very quickly, we decided, let's not fix something that isn't broken, right? Yeah. So what we just did, like Elliot described, is, how can we create a more functional representation of the logo that potentially has the ability to become a system with a solid circle, the ring logo, and then potentially even the letter forms by themselves? Yeah, it was exciting to explore, but I think right away kind of we realized that it would be a real system shock to see a completely different logo after all these decades.
I was just going to say, it's interesting how, I mean, just thinking about if they had rolled out a completely different brand, it would feel uncomfortable, disruptive. I mean, then you're like, it's a TV brand. It's not that big a deal. But I can see what you're saying. Whereas, I mean, even something as simple as NPR changed its Morning Edition music. We did a whole thing about it. And now I'm very used to it. But at the time, I remember that feeling very rattling. So, and also maybe in this day and age of like constant disruption, it's better just to leave some things sort of close to the same, right? Like we're pretty disrupted as it is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think there are kind of three things that we always talk about in terms of branding: consistency, creativity, and cohesion, the three C's. There's something so compelling about consistency, right? Like hearing the same thing, seeing the same thing, and becoming accustomed to it and getting an emotional attachment to it too. So we kind of realized that it would be a betrayal of our strategy as a brand, you know, with this idea of creating emotional connections with people and to kind of pull the rug out from everyone. So yeah, it became just an extension of the strategy to kind of just remake and redraw the logo, but to really retain its essence.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then beyond just the mark itself, you know, we did a lot of color palette exploration at the beginning. You know, this is the sort of early stage before the pandemic hit, you know, and we had a palette that was inspired by Pinot Grigio and Mojito and, you know, really sort of pushing it a little bit.
Green is what you're saying.
Yeah. It was almost like a Tiffany kind of green with this like know, kind of thing. And it was really nice and very sophisticated. And, you know, I think some of the feedback that kind of came back from that was it was really strong, really bold, really had pushed it, but maybe was a little, you know, bi-coastal, and they wanted to be much more inclusive. And then it's the sort of legacy of the red that, you know, kind of comes back on the table. But we also wanted to readdress the red color as well once we settled on red, because, you know, obviously ESPN is part of the portfolio and not so much of a female forward brand. And so it's really about finding that perfect red and that perfect dark blue to kind of sit it with, so it's not too heavy black, red and white. And it actually has like a little sensitivity to it as well.
Mm-hmm. One thing that it's funny that you just made me remember this, Elliot, but some, you know, we did a few days of workshops with employees at the brand early on, and I asked them the question of the popular brand strategist question of if ABC was a drink, what would it be? kind of open-ended, and everyone,
that rosé,
everyone mm-hmm. across the board said wine of some kind. So mm-hmm. it was rosé is very much where we landed in terms of the feeling of the brand, mm-hmm. which I think is great, and that aligns really well with something like the Oscars, you know, which is mm-hmm. black tie. But
I was gonna say bubbly rosé.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we were really actually I don't know if you remember this, Elliot, but we didn't start by designing frames for TV or digital, right. Or so we started by designing wine bottles and chocolate bars for the brand. And that was sort of our way in, because I often feel like for our designers, and Elliot and I talk about this all the time, it's inspiring to start with something that isn't actually going to be, you know, implemented in the brand. It's really cool if it does. Like, I was involved with the Comedy Central rebrand a few years ago, and they actually made a beer, actually mm-hmm. produced
I read about
a beer.
This. Yeah, yeah, because it was part of their palette.
Exactly, with the mm-hmm. summer ale.
I love that,
was, like,
actually.
Their color.
Yeah.
So we were hoping, secretly hoping, that we would end up getting, you know, a couple cases of wine and some chocolate
yes.
out of this.
Mm-hmm. Not secretly. Yeah.
But it's really fun to kind of encapsulate, take the spirit and energy, the vibe that's coming out of these meetings and these conversations that we're having, and the excitement from it, and turn it into something that people are, who doesn't love wine and chocolate? You know what I mean? So it's a great mm-hmm. way to really get ourselves immersed in the vibe of the brand. And I think it's still true to what the brand is now. And I think you said it perfectly, Paige, like the rosé, the red wine feeling of it, I think is still really comes through.
Well, you know what that is, I think, back to you really quickly, but it's, I think it's because back in the day it was Scandal and they had the Gladiators and they would all drink red wine and eat popcorn, right? That was the whole thing. Yeah. So I feel like that gets really tied into that overall brand, which is interesting that it's attached so firmly.
I was just going to add, I mean, part of obviously... what Bo and his team do so well is the, you know, the language, the tone of voice and everything like that. And quite early on in our development, as we look back to Paul Rand, he also had done this book all about play. And it was fascinating to kind of like look at it and also look at the way he designed and his stuff is very playful, but also mature. And then in the strategy workshops, like one of the stakeholders basically said, you know, and we quoted them verbatim, here to play, ABC is here to play. And we just love that idea, not necessarily like playing like with our toys, but more like we're a player on the stage. We are here to play. Mm-hmm. So the mock-up stage, like Bo's talking about, you know, we'd like make a matchbox that says here to spark things up, or, you know, we would just like play with that language a lot and explore it across different touch points with the palettes and the design system. And then you sort of come backwards from all that into the broadcast world and go, okay, how can we sort of translate this now?
I want people to think ABC is here to play was the quote. Right. And when we heard
sports,
that.
Right, because you've got sports and you've got.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you've got reality. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we did that exact thing, Paige, what you're saying. We put that phrase over Scandal, over NFL football, over, you know, all these different things, and Jimmy Kimmel, and it still continued to work. And that really became the ethos, like, let's play, let's have fun, let's make the brand really exciting and energizing and kind of sexy and cool. That was our mandate. And I think that shined through. The thing that happened along the way is a global pandemic, which global pandemic, a lot of, you know, social unrest. And that really changed the tenor of not necessarily the vision for the brand, but we always say that brands are never launched or never live in a vacuum, right? You always have to be aware of what's going on, not only internally at the brand with your own motivators, but also what's happening in this current moment and culture. I don't think it caused us to really deviate from anything that we were doing, but definitely influenced the work in terms of maybe, you know, initially wanting to be a bit more brash or bold or...
Yeah, how lighthearted could you be?
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Because I think that emotions, you know, the beautiful thing about them is there's a full spectrum of them, and the brand is still able to modulate based on those different emotions that are going on. So yeah, it was interesting.
Let's go back to the palette really quick before we wander too far away from it, which is, mm-hmm. Elliot, can you just elaborate then, where did you guys ultimately end up on what the palette is? And I do think it's a good idea to name all palettes after alcohol, just for the record.
Yeah, so we landed on this this specific red and this specific dark bluey black as the primary. And then as an accent to that, we would add this kind of lighting sheen as if you're like peeling a page of a magazine. So it's not like 3D lighting. It's just more like a wipe of light, sort of hint at that, you know,
like satin or something.
Yeah, some gloss. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then that applied to the backgrounds that we put things on as well, this sort of differentiation of tones that has like ramping hues going through, you know, just to sort of keep it flat, but also alive with some kind
and
of
a little luxe.
Yeah, exactly. And then we also did a secondary palette as well. So that is also part of the mix. There's like a blue and a yellow and an orange and things like that. Definitely leaned heavily into the red.
And what was the thinking there in terms of, I mean, you kind of discussed it, but what was the thinking there in terms of sticking with the red? Just because it was something that people were already very familiar with, so you didn't want to go too far afield. And red is certainly a very emotional color, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right. It almost... I'd be honest, like came from, yeah, a lot of thinking, I think on their side as well, internally, you know, how far do we want to take people, kind of to some of Beau's points as well earlier, you know, but it was just definitely where we landed up because of a lot of the legacy that they have with it. We know that also at Disney, they do often like to lean into the legacy of these tentpole mm-hmm. brands as well. So it was definitely a collaborative discussion.
Yeah, and I think there's like a sexiness to it too, right? Like not to be too reductive, but the idea of like a pop of lipstick. There's something really rich about the color that, you know, while we really enjoyed exploring, you know, the Pinot or the Prosecco, the gold, and then the Mojito kind of like green that we were working with. Like you said, Paige, I think we ultimately kind of came back. We kept coming back to this red because it felt more evocative and more... almost black tie in some instances. Mm-hmm. And also it's just really nice to have a color that you can lean into and own, you know, especially when we're all bombarded with so much information constantly. I think again, that consistency is really important. That cohesive quality of the brand is really important. And I think for us, the red ultimately got us there.
There's so many things about a red that I can attach to ABC. For example, you know, if you're talking about emotions, passion, love, if you're talking about the Oscars, which is a big brand for ABC, you know, it's red carpet. So mm-hmm. I think, yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense to me across the board. And it would be a pretty drastic switch to go to something more, I don't know, it feels like a little lighter and more frothy if you went to, you know, a Prosecco Mojito type mm-hmm. palette.
Yeah, mm-hmm. our inspiration, I think, really early on was also kind of like, the feeling of an Audi or a Lexus SUV, right? Something that feels a little bit elevated and confident. And so Elliot and I talk a lot about like what makes these brands feel like luxury brands. And I think the confidence is there to only use a few elements to mm-hmm. convey their messaging. And so whenever you see them, you associate them with those brands. And I think the more we kind of stripped away from the brand, the more it felt confident. And
yeah.
Like aligned with that vision of an elevated kind of luxury brand almost.
Did you do a kind of word cloud around the brand? Because just some of the things you're saying, emotional, confident, compelling. Did you guys have other words like that you were associating with the overall brand?
Yeah, for sure. We did. We generated a large list of words during our interview process, and then over 2 days of brand workshops, we kind of narrowed those down to their essential few. I don't want to give away all the secret sauce, but the words, you know, that we continue to talk about, I think are really essential to the brand, you know, being emotionally compelling, being character driven, just connecting with people on that level, I think is something that's really important to the brand. So, you know, I just associate ABC with these really like iconic stories and characters. And I think a lot of people do, like you just mentioned, Scandal or, you know, How to Get Away with Murder, Modern Family, whatever it is. It's
Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, Grey's Anatomy. There's just a feeling that you get from the brand that I think transcends definition. And so what we tried to do, just like when we worked with Fox, because I think there's a feeling with Fox that transcends definition as well. So it's tricky to kind of define that without ruining the magic of it, you know? Like,
how do you
maintain the special sauce strategically without diluting it?
Yeah, although internally or in your work, I'm sure you're very precisely defining it.
Yes.
That's totally fine if you don't have the larger world.
No, it's great because, you know, I think our perspective on strategy is that it should reflect the brand. So we're never trying to be prescriptive. The strategy should feel like it's coming from the tone and the spirit and the energy of the brand. So we tried to write language that was really evocative and emotionally connective and compelling in the work itself. So rather than being defined, I think, by a few words, I think the spirit of the brand more than anything was really, yeah, I don't know, just this idea of moving people was the thing that we kept coming back to in every sense of those words.
One thing you guys kind of touched on before was doing a brand that has to work across all facets of ABC. So when you're doing these kinds of brand refreshes or rebrands for somebody like ABC, it's an interesting challenge, right? Because you've got to go all the way up to corporate, all the way down to digital platforms, all the way across 200 or however many ABC affiliates, plus you've got their own station. So it has to work in a lot of contexts and you have to serve a lot of clients. So did you have to experience sort of the full gamut of that, or was your assignment a little simpler and then they sort of took that out across the company? How did that work?
Yeah, essentially our assignment was to set the, you know, the rules, the guidelines, you know, give motion examples, well, actually make physical motion pieces, create toolkits for the affiliates where they could, you know, customize some of the elements according to things that, you know, we gave them strict rules about. Unfortunately, we didn't get to do chocolate or wine bottles, but, you know, we would
still an option, still a possibility.
But yeah, we would, you know, I mean, we had an amazing meeting with the affiliates who were very excited about going flat and simple colored, you know, because of problems they've been trying to, you know, solve for a long time. So, you know, things like that were very, very fluid. We just gave them the file and they got on with it. And it's been really exciting to see, you know, some of those things ripple out.
Okay, but you did have to consider it because you had to create toolkits, et cetera, to accommodate that.
Yeah, within reason. Like, we didn't create specific toolkits for how to put a decal on a bus or, you know, on a broadcast truck or something. You know what I mean? For the most part, it's like digital social style guides, tone of voice toolkits, like After Effects toolkits for all of the deliverables for the platforms.
Okay, so it's still no small task. Just not quite Not quite as detailed as having to do all 200 affiliates, but it's still pretty broad. Yeah.
Yeah, we'd probably still be going if that was the case.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Those rebranding things are really huge. The other thing I wanted to talk about, and I'm going to give myself a space right here where I'm going to insert the new mnemonic. When you guys, as part of this, were you tasked with doing the mnemonic, or was that something that they went and set out separately? They worked where you worked with a company called You Two Can Woo, which I love so much.
We love them too.
So let me, I guess, start with you. Just sort of talk about how that whole part of this evolved.
Yeah, it was always always a part of the process from the beginning. And we had the luxury of Alex Moulton, who is the chief creative officer at Trollback & Company, owned and ran a sonic branding studio for about 12 years. He's very deeply interested in and engaged with sound and music still today. So very much a part of what we do. So from the beginning, we knew that we would be working with the mnemonic and approaching it. And like I said at the beginning, kind of everything was on the table at the beginning of this process. And a lot of it, even though we ended up kind of back to a lot of the things that define the roots and the foundation of the brand for a long time, we didn't radically change that much, at least on a cursory view of the brand. But we did want to approach the mnemonic from a fresh point of view, also knowing that the same thing happens with sound as with design in an identity, where the sound of the brand, the sonic branding, needs to live and breathe across all these new touch points and spaces as well. So the evolution of the mnemonic was really, again, looking at where the brand has been and where they're going in the future. And Elliot can talk about a little bit more practically working with you two and Wu, because we love working with them, but he was very much involved in that process.
We've worked a lot with YouTube and Wu on jobs for Apple, Spotify, NBC Upfront, and you know, we just have a very good working relationship with them. They're extremely generous. They always do great demos. And yeah, we did a whole demo phase with other companies as well, and they just rose to the top. And what they actually did was, if you hear the original mnemonic, it has four notes. And what we did,
hear in my head right now.
Yeah, we took three of them because, you know, there's only three letters in the logo, and it made sense to discard everything that means nothing, you know. So that was the first thing they did. And then obviously they did a lot of exploration in different instrumentation, and you know, we proposed, yeah, you could flex it like this and like that. But for the purposes of the actual launch, we just kind of kept it simple with one final audio bed.
This is the one area where I think you guys also kind of touched on it, which is that I do feel like it changed a fair amount. Like you had there was a lot of creative room to run on the mnemonic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think... weird newfound love affair with mnemonics. I don't know why, but I really like them for some reason.
Oh, you should get Alex to do his sonic branding presentation to you.
Oh, I should.
Yeah. Really good.
No, I mean, sound, again, to coming back to emotions, so intrinsically tied with them as well. You know, I remember Elliot's son even talking, he heard the ABC mnemonic once and he's like, oh, that's ABC. You know, so there's an emotional connection and a practical connection that we make with brands. And knowing that a brand needs to live and breathe across all of these new touch points, like, you know, smart speakers, where there might not even be a visual element to it. So having that mnemonic that could work across all these spaces was really, really important for the brand.
Yeah, I think that's the part I find so interesting, is that how much it connects emotionally and how much I think people don't realize it. But then, yes, you can, I'm sure now that we've mentioned the four note old ABC mnemonic, everybody can hear it in their heads too.
Alex always says, just to quickly add to this, is, you know, you can't switch off your ears. You can, you know, to Beau's point as well, you can like not see something by, in the kitchen, you're like not looking at the table, you know, the TV or whatever, but you can still hear. So yeah, it just cuts through. It's really, really important to have a good mnemonic.
Yeah, I agree. All right, last question. So now that this is all said and done, do you guys find that it's harder to do a brand refresh like this, where you end up sort of making very strategic tweaks? Or do you think it's harder to just wholesale rebrand something?
A great question.
Yeah, I think it's harder to do anything in a pandemic.
Yeah, true fact.
The simple answer is, you know, we love both tasks, honestly. It's always a good challenge, no matter what it is. Like if you have tight guardrails or a set of assumed tight guardrails that you kind of need to work within, it's a really good discipline to sort of keep something iconic, but, you know, that is iconic and loved, but also make it feel like a new, you know, like a nice new pair of shoes that you can walk in and feel more confident, for example. I think that's one side of it. On the other side, we love it when, you know, we're given carte blanche to just like dream big and start from scratch. I mean, classic example, when we rebranded the Weather Channel, David Clark, he had a mantra for us, which was make it hurt. Things like that. It's almost like cool shit for baller women, really powerful short statements that really inspire you. And
wait,
so
what does he mean by make it hurt? For you or for the viewer?
No. Sorry, yeah.
No, no, no.
For the internal people who are very, you know, who had a lot of different technologies plugged into the screen, and it was getting very crowded, and it was unconsidered as an entire ecosystem and how it translates to digital. So basically they were like, yeah, rip up the floor. And for us, that was great, you know.
Cause, like, kill your darlings, kind of.
Yeah. Exactly.
What I have to move on, yeah.
What we find a lot, and first I'll say that it's never hard. Like, nothing is, I don't feel like it's difficult or hard. It's always just a blessing to be able to do what we do. Honestly, I feel like that. Like, this is, we get to help people, you know, entertain the world, and that's amazing. It's just different. I think what we often find is, like Elliot just mentioned with the Weather Channel examples, that the people that we work with, our collaborators inside the brands, live and breathe the brands 24 hours a day. They're so used to the processes that they've been doing. They're so used to living with the brand and seeing the brand constantly that it's sometimes challenging to think about things in a new way. And often what we find during the strategic process early on working with someone is that a philosophical shift can be really powerful, right? So the difference between thinking of yourself as a broadcast television network versus a modern entertainment brand. Once that philosophical shift happens, everyone gets really excited about the process. So I think it's just a matter of returning to our objective. Like, what are we really trying to accomplish together? Reminding people that this isn't about subjectivity, right? It's not about us liking or disliking something. It's about creating work that's appropriate for the objective. And then just helping everyone to stay excited and engaged through the process. And that's the fun part.
What you're saying is you served as both brand consultant and therapist.
For sure. Like, that's one of the blessings. That's one of the blessings of what we do is getting to sit down with people. And that's really what I miss, you know, in the age of COVID, is the ability to really get in a room with everyone and get to the bottom of things. Like, and sometimes it does turn into therapy, you know, for both of us, but in the best way.
All right, I will leave it there. Although I'm like, I feel like in the next couple of years, you'll have plenty of opportunities to provide therapy for many people. So get ready. thank you guys so much, and congratulations on it. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been great.
Have an awesome day, and it was great talking to you. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
That's it for this episode of the Daily Brief Podcast. If you have suggestions for conversations, please reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn at Promax Global, or on Instagram and Twitter at Promax_Global. You can also email us at dailybrief@promax.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief Podcast on Apple Podcasts, where you can also rate and review us, or on Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, thanks for listening.